When you look at children who have become autistic, it's usually more than just vaccination, because you have to look at the whole immune system of the child. And the immune system begins to grow within days of conception. And even the mother's immune system changes at conception. And so immune system function, even the mother's immune system, contributes to autism risk in a child. For instance, we now know, without a shadow of a doubt, that what we call maternal immune activation has a contribution to schizophrenia, depression, and autism in children and adults. It doesn't matter if her immune system was stimulated by a war or by a virus or a bacteria or a vaccine. It's maternal immune activation. It's completely irrelevant what caused it. So a lot of inflammation in the mother changes how that baby's brain develops. Babies' brains, they basically grow kind of like a bonsai tree, and then the immune system trims it back, and it grows and trims back, and that's how child's brains grow. And it doesn't happen properly in autism. They find bigger brains, they find lots of inflammation in the brain of autistic children. We know their immune systems aren't functioning properly. We know their bowels are abnormal. We know that, I'm giving you a really quick version of my infant immunity talk that's 5 hours long, but we know that even having oxytocin during delivery increases the male autism rate by up to 30%. Okay, so if you, basically they're taking oxytocin is a hormone from a cow brain, and they inject that into the mother. So they say it's epigenetically changes something in the baby. Other elements of immune function in babies, breast milk versus formula. Breast milk is a continuation of maternal immunity in the uterus. It's vitally important for exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months. And even the World Health Organization recommends continuing to feed for up to 2 years. So the reason is because this continues to keep the baby in an anti-inflammatory state. Everything from conception to I'd say at least 1 year of age is trying to keep that baby's immune system anti-inflammatory, to keep that baby's body anti-inflammatory. The placenta, the stem cells, the amniotic fluid, all these things are programmed to anti-inflammatory for that baby. Mother's milk is deadly to pneumococcal bacteria, it's deadly to cancer cells, and it does this all without causing inflammation. It's amazing. I mean, there are substances in mother's milk to keep inflammation down and still kill microbes. So everything is designed to stay anti-inflammatory. The kind of microbes that go into the baby's intestines change the inflammatory predisposition of the baby. Having the microbes that they get from breast milk keeps anti-inflammatory. But if you give formula, the microbes in the baby's intestine are totally different. And one bottle of formula will change that baby's intestine for 2 weeks. Okay? So formula is really something that does not contribute to the anti-inflammatory and protective immunologic development of the baby. So those are all just a few of the examples of when I say it's not just one thing. But let's take a look at vaccination. Let's take a look at what's going on in America, because what we're finding is that as other countries start to change their vaccine programs to mimic ours, their autism rates go up, and I'll show you an example of that. In America today, 1 in 6 of our children has neurodevelopmental disability. 1 in 68 has autism. 1 in 10 has ADD, attention deficit disorder. I mean, you can read the list, and if you'd like, please go to this blog, and in the blog, all the links to the Centers for Disease Control, and the official statistics giving you this are all there. Okay, so this isn't some upset mother who made this up. This is official statistics in here. Okay, all right, so we hear all kinds of reasoning as to why we have more autism all the time. We hear that it's environmental. We hear that they changed the diagnostic criteria. We hear that the world is more sensitive to noticing. But if you talk to school teachers that are around 70 or 80 years old, they'll tell you that that there were not autistic children in their schools. I remember growing up that there was like maybe one person that was kind of a little off, but there was no huge branch of special education in my school, and we were performing at higher level overall than children are today. So there's definitely something going on. But let's look here, because we changed the diagnostic criteria in 1994. So let's just cut that possibility out completely and look at the rates of increase in the United States. Each year, you can see this is the number, the absolute number that is added to the total number. So you can see that each year from 1994 to 2012, we're seeing an increase, a significant increase. There were 6,000 new cases in 1995, and 2011, there are 37,000 new cases. So what's going on here? Well, let's look at 2011. So this is United States' schedule, and you can see there are many vaccines. We're giving 42 antigens by age 6. So I counted hepatitis B as one antigen, DTaP as 3 antigens, okay? So that's how we count this. Each of the red arrows are vaccines that Finland was not giving in 2011, but they're giving them now, okay? They just changed it. I had my host, when I was there, look this up for me, and the new recommendations, the government is now recommending all of these vaccines with the red arrows. Here was their schedule in 2011. This is the official. I just screenshotted the document from the, I think it's Eurozone or something like that. And you can see that they are having 29 antigens in 2011, but they've since then added. But over time, they have also had an increase in their autism rate. But let's look at 2011. 2011 autism rate in Finland was 1 in 86. And ours was 1 in 68. So, you know, the argument is that correlation does not equal causation, but there are lots of reasons to believe that the vaccination rate and the aluminum injection rate can be a contributing factor. Here we have a very important study from 2011 by Tom Linovic and Shaw. These are two independent researchers. And it's really important to read some of the independent research and not just the pharmaceutical-funded research, which is known to be of lower quality and usually has a desired endpoint before the study is even done. So here, they just it's a whole discussion on aluminium from these independent researchers. And what they show is that the more aluminium and the earlier it's given to babies, the higher their autism rates relationship. So here we had Finland, and 12.2 per 10,000 when this paper was written. And you can see their aluminium doses are quite small. And then look at United States and United Kingdom, and you can see we start doing at birth with hepatitis B vaccines. And you can see that much higher doses and earlier administration correlates to the autism rate. Whoops. Here we have an article that was written in 2000 by a Finn. And they looked at the autism rates in northern Finland in children between the ages of 3 and 18. And we see in 1991, this is the rate, 4.75. In 1996, we're up to 12.2. And if you look at certain age group between 5 and 7, it's much higher, 20.7. Now, what's happening today? Today, in 2013, this paper was published, and we see it's up even higher, 53.7 per 10,000 overall. And these are the rates in boys and girls. And this doctor says that they are reporting an 8-fold increase in the incidence rates of ASD, between 1987 and 1992. This is an interesting slide, and I think you need to understand a little bit more than what I told you about the rotten beef heart that goes into tetanus vaccines, because these are just a small sampling of the animal cells that are used to make vaccines. This is a Cocker Spaniel dog, and there is a line of cells called Maiden Darby, and they are tumorigenic Cocker Spaniel kidney cells. And we're told that they are low tumorigenic capacity. And they like the tumorigenic because they divide rapidly and they make ideal substance to make a lot of vaccines. So this is used in some of the flu shots that are given today. We have aborted fetal cells that are used commonly in different vaccines today. We commonly use chick embryo. Caterpillars are in the Cervarix HPV vaccine. Caterpillar cells are used. Monkeys have been used for a long time, their kidneys. Cows, we're using their blood routinely to make vaccines. And we've got pigs. So we now know that just 2 weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago, this important study was released. And this doctor, another independent researcher from the United States, with a very strong curriculum vitae, has come out talking about these human cells that are used to make vaccines. But let me just tell you that they started using these human cells because there were so many problems with the animal cells. Like in the 1950s through the 1990s, there was a cancer virus in these monkey kidney cells that didn't cause any problem to the monkeys, but was correlated to tumors in the brains and lungs of humans. And the doctor who's done much of the research on this virus, an Italian scientist named Dr. Michele Carboni, calls this virus the perfect war machine, because he says he couldn't have designed a better cancer virus if he was able to. So this has been a problem with animal cells. There have been other kinds of viruses that come into animal cells. And so they said, well, let's try these human cells. We can control them better, and it should be safer. Well, here's something. Okay, I have to back up a minute. We normally think of retroviruses as something that's like HIV, right? But in recent breast milk literature, we find that there are retroviruses in humans and that they actually serve a purpose. For instance, if you have a baby that has a genetic disorder and you don't have the genetic disorder, or if you breastfeed another baby who has a genetic disorder and you don't, your breast milk, because of these retroviruses, can actually change that baby's genetic makeup and cure their genetic problems. I'm trying to think. Irmak, I-R-M-A-K, is the author of two of these studies. And he dedicated one of the papers to the baby who was cured of a genetic disorder by a wet nurse, okay? And he goes into details about these retroviruses. Now, we're loaded with retroviruses, like it or not. So these human fetal cells also all have retroviruses. And what we find is with the introduction of the use of these human fetal cells is that we've also seen a rise in autism rates. And you can see there's actually a little curve, a little bend in the curve with each one. This is when we started using the new measles, mumps, rubella made on these cells. This is when we started increasing the compliance to it. This is when chickenpox in USA was introduced, also made on these cells. And here's a hepatitis A came in here. So there was speculation that this could have been related to some of the autism, but now we've got some actual science from this doctor here. Her name is Teresa Dietert, D-E-I-T-E-R-T. Go ahead and read about her. She's actually put out, this is an article you can get for free. And I'm sorry that I can't read this whole thing to you. But if you just Google this human fetal DNA, Teresa Dietert, you will get this. And then in this article, you can find the scientific paper link. It's out there, it's being talked about a lot. And what she's showing is that the combination of the DNA and these retroviruses is a highly likely contributor to abnormal brain function. I told you she's an independent researcher. She has a PhD in molecular and cellular physiology from Stanford University, which is a very well-respected university in the United States. She spent 20 years in commercial biotechnology, so she's worked in industry for a long time. She's an inventor of 23 US patents. She's world-renowned for her work in stem cells. She discovered the stem cells that are in heart, okay? So this is a lady that's done her homework and knows how to run a lab. And so she has published this paper basically saying that the genetic material from vaccines can incorporate into our genome. Now, to me, it's alarming enough that human DNA can incorporate into our genome. But I find it even more alarming, the possibility that what if we're given two vaccines at once, like kids often are? What if we're given a vaccine that was made on monkey cells or cocker spaniel cells or genetically modified caterpillar cells at the same time? Can that get into our DNA? I think we still have to answer that question, but we know that epigenetically it alters us. I'm just taking a couple quotes from her. This is really interesting because a few years ago, I went searching for the industry protocols on how to manufacture vaccine. And there's a recommendation on what you should try to limit the amount of DNA in a vaccine. And they say that you should limit it when possible. So they always give themselves a loophole, but it's said to be recommended when possible to less than 10 nanograms per dose. And that's what I always remembered. And I thought, I wonder how they came up with that. I still don't know how they came up with that. But Dr. Deischer actually looked at the vaccines to see how much exogenous DNA was in there. And she finds it's between 142 and 2,000 nanograms per dose. So you can see right away how the recommendations to the pharmaceutical companies, the vaccine manufacturers, are one thing, and what happens in reality is completely different. This is a quote from her, that there are a large number of publications about the presence of human endogenous retrovirus and its association with childhood lymphoma. Okay, so imagine if these retroviruses and DNAs are getting into our genes, that of course they'll be able to cause cancer. And she says the measles, mumps, rubella 2, and chickenpox vaccines, and indeed all vaccines that are made using WI38. There are two cell lines of human fetal cells. One is WI38 and one is called MR6. And she says all vaccines that are made on these are contaminated with this retrovirus. Another quote from her is that that these retroviral and human DNA fragments fulfills all of the necessary requirements as a primary trigger for autism disorder. And I don't have time to get into the details of how she describes that, but you can go and read that for yourself. There's a poster presentation by her that's available and this new paper that just came out. And I've described to you a little bit about how it works through breast milk, these retroviruses, but now we're seeing that it actually works in ways that may not be so healthy and desirable. All right, well, we were talking about aluminum a little while ago, and this guy here, he's a medical doctor from the United States, and he invented a vaccine, and he has also served on the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices. And this is common in the United States for either vaccine inventors or people who profit from vaccination are serving on the board to tell us what vaccines we should take. That's one thing. But we're constantly told by the pro-vaccine that not only is aluminium something we shouldn't worry about, but that this guy actually said this on his website, which you can go and look for yourself because it's still there. He said, aluminium is considered to be an essential metal with quantities fluctuating naturally during normal cellular activity. And it's found in all tissues, and this is, get this, it's believed to play an important role in the development of a healthy fetus. This is a complete lie, and this is how they're trying to convince you that you shouldn't worry about aluminium in the childhood vaccines. Now, he is not an aluminium scientist. He's never treated a case of autism. Let's get to people who have done their homework. This scientist here that I mentioned before, this is a quote from his paper. He says, yes, aluminium is abundant. It is not essential for life. On the contrary, it's widely recognized neurotoxin that inhibits more than 200 biologically important functions and causes various adverse effects in plants, animals, and humans. And he goes into great detail about how that occurs. Yes, you had a question.
There was supposed to test that aluminium is good. What did they say?
They say that because it's found in breast milk, that it must be good and it must be safe because it's found in breast milk. And they say that because it's in the fetus, it must be, there's no scientific support for how it plays an important role. They say it's believed, okay? So we're talking religion here, okay? We're not talking science when we're talking about believed. He doesn't say it's scientifically shown. Dr. Kawahara scientifically has shown how it's not any of this. Okay, so that's a little bit on autism.